Okay, our speaker, Sally P, will now share her experience for 15 minutes on step one. And Anna, can you time for her? And Sally, do you want any specific warning?
I'm going to try to pay attention to my time myself.
Okay,
Okay.
sounds good.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Sally. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm a chaos creator, codependent, dot, dot, dot. This is probably my third time speaking at a BBA meeting, and my prayer when we were meditating was, God, help me speak what you want me to say and not make a fool of myself. You know, still so worried about what you're going to think of me and are you going to like me and what's the little dance I can do so I can get all of your approval. And I just want to get that out of the way because I'm a precious child of God, just like the rest of you guys, doing the best I can one day at a time. So I found the 12 steps when I was 23. I'm 60, I'm 66 now. And I got in the rooms through Overeaters Anonymous after suffering my entire childhood with an eating disorder. And I loved it. I was like, I'm home. And all they had at the time was the Big Book. That was the only piece of literature that was available. And I loved it. People were just sitting around reading from the Big Book. And I knew that this was my only chance left. And so I dove into the program and I worked the steps as hard as I could, as much as I was able to understand them. But I think it was more of a checklist. Gotta do this, gotta do this, gotta do this, you know, and built up many years of abstinence. Still a crazy person. I'm a survivor of complex trauma and I realize now through my fourth step that my driving force my whole life has been, I'm insignificant. You're going to reject me. I'm not good enough. So what's everything that I can do to prove to the world and myself that I'm not good enough? Because I was born a twin. My mom didn't know she was having me. I popped out. So she was having one baby and I popped out. And I was the scapegoat in the family. I was the punching bag. I was the one that was, I had the bullshit meter instilled in me at a young age. You know, when bullshit was going on in the home, I would say something about it. And of course I'd get in trouble and I became the bad one. And so I took that on very early in life that I'm worthless and that I've got to prove myself. I want to talk about how I got into BBA. So many years passed, lots of sorrows, lots of joys, fun career in music and theater and then the healing arts. But once again, there was all this striving underneath. You know, I gotta prove myself. You know, I had this picture of, you know, what I was supposed to look like because I felt that as just a simple person without all these big frills around me that I wasn't okay. So there was a lot of striving going on. So a lot of adrenaline. I mean, I see back now that, oh my God, I was driven by adrenaline. Even like I'd say, I want to go, I lived in New York. I want to go shopping. And I would be obsessing about that thing that I want to get. And I would have, it would be this adrenaline thing that I was chasing. And I didn't realize until I got into BBA that I was adrenaline ran me. And what I did to quiet that adrenaline was I'd pick up the food, drugs, alcohol. You know, I couldn't. When I was young, that's what you did. I ate. That's how I anesthetized myself. As soon as I could drink, as soon as I could drug, I jumped into it. So I spent many years in the program. A lot of serenity, a lot of insanity. I want to fast forward to what happened to me last year. It'll be about a year. It's actually a year on October 7th that I had my BBA breakdown, I want to call it, you know. So my twin sister died from this disease 22 years ago. Absolutely devastating, the most painful thing I've ever been through. And it's still painful, but God has helped me see it differently. Well, about 3 years ago, my last sibling died of alcoholism. And my first thought was, God, you got to be kidding me, you know. But I turned my will and my life over to God many years ago in this program. So I figured this is the way it's supposed to be. God, one day at a time, give me strength to deal with it. But in my mind, and she left behind two kids. One's adopted and she's an addict, very lots of complex trauma. And the other one's the good little codependent girl. And so, because I felt like such a shitty family member and I was the problem in the family, I subconsciously made this decision. Well, my sister's not around anymore to raise her kids. So Mama Sally's going to jump in. You know, that's my new job. That's my new purpose. Seek and save the lost. You know, my sister used to say, we don't hear from you for the longest. We don't see you that much. And then you ride in on your white horse and everything's fun and great, you know, but where are you in the between things? So this was my chance to make up for being a crappy sister. And what I did was I set myself up and I didn't even know it. So what happened was, is one of my nieces, the one who's troubled, a year ago, was moved into a new house that her father had bought for her. And she was complaining to me on the phone because she didn't have any furniture and she didn't know any friend, have any friends and blah, blah, blah. So I took pity on her and I said, well, I'm coming to New York. Why don't we go shopping? You know, look, I'll come, we'll see you each other. We'll go shopping and we'll get what you need. So I was like, this is my chance to make up. So I took her shopping. I spoiled the heck out of her. In between all these excursions, you know, she was complaining about her life. I think she was doing some sort of drug. And the whole time there's this Sally who's judging her because she's not behaving the way I want to and trying to get her to be someone other than she is. So anyway, I spent a weekend with her and I was so in so much turmoil after watching this kid who I wasn't approving of her behavior. I wasn't approving of her lifestyle. And she didn't give me the acknowledgement and that you're the best aunt ever. And I thought, you know, I could keep her from complaining about her life by spoiling her and doing all this stuff. And it didn't stop. She still complained and bitched the whole weekend. And I was furious at her. And my fury was so out of proportion. They say that when you're acting hysterically, you're in your history. And this is after so many years of the program, and I was getting ready to take a 5-year chip in another program. And I said, I can't take that chip. I'm undeserving of it. I'm crazy. What's wrong with me? And I'm working the steps. I'm doing my 10 steps. I'm doing service. I'm going to meetings. What am I not getting? And so I was really at a bottom. I was so concerned and why, what was this turmoil? Because what happened to me was I was so angry. I had road rage. I couldn't see the beautiful fall that was unfolding around me in New England. All I could think about was what she did. All I could talk about to 10 people on the phone is what she did. It consumed me for the longest time. And I ended up calling out of the blue, I decided to call a friend that I hadn't seen and heard in one of my phone meetings in many years. I'm like, where have you been? And she said, well, I'm working this program called BBA. I'm like, what's BBA? And all she did was send me the websites, the two websites, recoveredfrom.com and the BBA websites. And I got on my first meeting and Michael from Miracle Monday was leading it. And, you know, he's such a big, yummy little teddy bear. And I couldn't believe the love in the rooms because one of the things I've struggled with is I've always found these really dogmatic meetings that resembled my childhood almost, you know, you're not doing it right. And you more 10 steps and just, and I would try to follow their rules and regulations. I did the same thing with religion. Let me follow all these rules and regulations equals a good Sally. And so I couldn't believe the love and the recovery I heard in the room. And then I randomly listened to a speaker and it was Tyla telling her story of how long she'd been in the program. And yet she was suicidal. And she didn't have, and I realized, you know, I am not emotionally sober. And I immediately said, I need to start over. So I bugged the heck out of people until I found a workshop. I was going to do any workshop available. I knew I needed to do the steps again. And the workshop that came up was Chaos Creators. And I'm like, oh, Chaos Creator, you know? And I started listening to these meetings and getting on the emotional sobriety meetings. And I just love that all of our meetings, anybody with an addiction can show up. There's none of this, you're not a bad enough alcoholic, you can't share. Because when I was first in the program in OA, I didn't hear the message. So I'd go to open AA meetings so I could hear the message. And I was hearing the message big time in these rooms, unlike anything I'd ever heard before. And so I got in a workshop, and then one of the ladies on this line, Miss Anna, called me right before I started the workshop and said, I'd like to be your step guide. And I didn't even have to look for a step guide. And I dove into this workshop and I cried and I struggled and I went deeper. I had no idea how much pain I still had inside of me because I was trying to play this role of Miss Program. They had it all, and my workshop and these my workshop created this womb for me to fall apart. And instead of saying, you know, call a newcomer, get out of yourself, you know, do service work, they were like, Sally, every time you're flinging snot and crying, you're having a spiritual awakening. And I got to go so deep, you guys. And my step experience, I mean, I hated the first step, but I knew it was like I was finally understanding the steps, because the steps were not being done up here. They were being done in my body. So a year later, it'll be a year in October that I've done, been through the, that I got into BBA. Where am I a year later? I don't have that loud critical voice screaming in me that I'm bad, and I don't do that to others as much. I know I've got a way to go, but I don't have that critical voice. It doesn't run me as much. I've also, because of the inventory process, I see that the death of my sisters, you know, was one of the greatest gifts for me, because I went so deep and I was able to look, number one, feel that pain, which is absolutely horrendous, and look at how I set myself, because I want to look when people, I'm an end of life doula. That's one of the things I became from all the losses in my life. I want to see death a new way. I want to see life a new way, instead of the way I was programmed, the way the world programs me. And the only way I can do that for me is to get as close to God as I possibly can every day and say, please get me out of the way. Let me see your magic. There's so much magic. And because of my programming, I couldn't see any of it. I couldn't feel any of it. But in spite of my programming, God has taken me on this road. For all these years of recovery, I thought I was doing it wrong. I wasn't doing it wrong. I was where I was supposed to be to learn what I had to learn. And God brought me to a place to say, I'm going to show you this new piece. And this new piece is going to give you so much freedom. I'm really glad I'm an addict today. And I say, I felt so little of myself that when both my sisters died, it was like, well, why take me? Let them stay. And now I'm like, they're at peace, Sally, and they're with me, and their gift to me is catapulting me into a newer way of life. I had a guy, I'm looking at my time, so I need to wrap it up. I listened to a talk the other day, and this guy said, and it's one of the most brave, it's one of his prayers. It was so brave. And I'm starting to pray it. God, please don't take this person or this situation out of my life until I learn the lesson I need to learn. And I have to tell you that that niece of mine that pissed me off so badly last year is still not doing things my way. You know, she went into treatment. She's now in the halfway house. She's not, our whole family wants to call up the halfway house and say, why isn't she doing this? well, I might want to do that, but I know that if I do that, it's like picking up a drink. You know, if I pick up that phone and stick my nose into her process, I'm going to spiral into an adrenaline headache. And I had one just the other day because I stuck my nose into something that wasn't my business. And I felt the adrenaline in my body. It's like I'm shut off from here down. It was all in here. And I had adrenaline headache. And I said, thank you, God, because I still struggle with that whole physical allergy. And I used to thrive on that adrenaline. And now I don't like it. I don't, but I still do it because I'm an addict. And I think because I'm okay, I don't know if I'll ever be able to say I'm a recovered chaos creator. I just don't know, you know, and I don't know. It's a gift. Every time I stick my finger in the pot and I fall on my face, it's just another reminder of how much I need God. And one of the things that I've done since becoming part of BBA, after my workshop, I need to take another minute. After my workshop, I was like, where do I go? Where am I? I don't want to leave this little womb of people that I love so much. And lo and behold, this little womb of people, we do a two-way prayer. And I'm on two-way prayer at least 4 mornings a week. And that has changed my life because I hear these people saying to me, I hear them say that God loves them and how God's working in their life and these loving words of God and not criticism. And that's how I start my day. And so I get to go through my day where I'm criticizing Sally less, and then I'm criticizing you and the world less. And I'm out of time. To be continued. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you so much.